Good evening and welcome to the Paranormal 360. Tonight, we take you deep into the Ozarks, to a patch of land whispered about for decades, a place some investigators say is every bit as strange as Skinwalker Ranch. It's called Marley Woods, and for years, it's been a quiet epicenter of lights in the sky, vanishing creatures, and encounters that rewrite what we think we know about physics, reality, and consciousness itself. My guest tonight, Thomas Ferrario, isn't just another observer. He's a man who spent a lifetime at crossroads of science and the unexplained. A dive master, machinist, and electrical engineer, Thomas has worked on projects across the United States, China, and Bermuda. He's been an independent UFO researcher since 1969, and in 1998, he was invited by MUFON founder Walt Andrus to become a section director. From there, he served as assistant state director for Missouri MUFON, co-founded the organization's dive team with Debbie Zegmeyer, and later joined legendary investigator Ted Phillips on his Marley Woods project and the Tetra Mountain Moonshaft research. When it comes to hidden truths and high strangeness, few have logged more field hours or faced the unknown more directly than Thomas Ferrario. So buckle in. Tonight, we're lifting the veil on one of America's most secret paranormal hotspots and uncovering the secret of Marley Woods. Joining me now on the Coldwell Banker Hotline, we have Tom Ferrario. Tom, thank you so much for being here this evening.
Well, thank you for having me, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here. I'll tell you, it's a pleasure to be anywhere right now. So,
right. Well, I'm excited to talk to you about this. Again, people are familiar with Skinwalker Ranch, especially due to the popularity of the Secrets of Skinwalker Ranch TV series for all these years. And it has certainly brought out a fair share of high strangeness. Everything, as we mentioned, from portals to strange creatures to ghosts to lights in the sky, craft in the sky. And you'd think that that would make it pretty unique. Like, there can't possibly be more than hotspots like that around the United States and around the world. But there are actually quite a few places that fall into this vein. How did you first come upon Marley Woods?
I have to go back. I started a lifelong relationship with Ted Phillips, and he died in 20, and I can't believe it's 5 years now we've been without Ted out at Marley. And he was such a unique man and such a qualified person. You know, he worked with Dr. Hynek, J. Allen Hynek, and Jacques Vallée, and Douglas Trumbull, and other, the list goes on and on. And I worked with a gentleman named Bruce Whitteman, who you may have heard of, maybe not. He was the first state director for the Mutual UFO Network, and that MUFON was started in St. Louis, Missouri, by engineers in the aerospace industry. And through Bruce, I worked with Bruce, and he knew Ted Phillips. He brought Ted Phillips in for lectures, and I was always captivated with Ted. I offered Ted my services one time in Marley, and he took me up on it. And we formed a lifelong bond. And after Ted's passing, they asked me to take over for him in the project, and I did. And so that's basically I got started. I was been involved in it since probably 2000.
All right. Now, being an investigator and a field researcher, going out, hearing claims of high strangeness, when you start to hear about a place like Marley Woods, it sounds too good to be true. I mean, how reserved were you going in to start looking into the claims coming from this location?
My experience, I was a lot like Ted Phillips in my early days. I wanted to find the structured craft, you know, the nuts and bolts thing, a piece of the craft or physical trace. As Ted was in the beginning, and as Ted said so often that he felt that through the years, as our technology advanced, they lowered their risk factor and went into more the unstructured craft, the light ball activity, hidden forces, the unseen force, paranormal events, which I will tell you, we can touch upon that later. But there are some commonalities that I've learned through the people I've been associated with that everyone that's in this business comes to and agrees with this. But over the years, it was just such a fascinating place. I never expected to have experiences as Ted didn't. He always said he was chasing breadcrumbs, and Marley was the first place he actually experienced anything. And And that virtually kept him there the rest of his life. He devoted to Marley. So, and we had, you know, we've seen structured craft, cryptid activity, the paranormal, poltergeist type activity, the unseen force, light balls, the light beam. It just goes on and on like Skinwalker, I will tell you.
All right. I need to know then, Tom, is all of these claims play out, all of these strange phenomena are taking place. In your opinion, after all the years that you've been there, what do you think is responsible for bringing this activity to this specific location?
I will have to tell you the one commonality that, and better men than me, than myself, Jacques Vallée, thanks to Ted, we were so fortunate to work with Jacques Vallée out there. We worked actually for a while. Robert Bigelow was involved with us, so he can speak about that now. And Cone Keller was out there with us. And but I will tell you that the one commonality that we proved in many ways was it's not interplanetary. It's all interdimensional. And it all comes from the same intelligence source that it. And I know that, I believe me, I've lost a lot of friends in ufology over this and a lot of arguments, I'll tell you, into the wee hours of the morning with people. And but it is, it truly is interdimensional. And when it's here and people say, well, you don't believe on life and other planets and all these different civilizations. And I said, no, I absolutely do. But it will be attained through interdimensionally based frequency driven, as Jacques Vallée says. And but that in a nutshell is what we learned. The one thing we had in concrete to come away with.
Well, let me ask you about that again, because I know there are listeners worldwide hearing that statement. Yes. You say this is what we learned. This is what we know definitively. How do you determine that this is something that's interdimensional? And is there a difference between the term multidimensional and interdimensional?
Yes. And interdimensional can be multidimensional. But when you get into that terminology, there again, people like to attach with multidimensional, the interplanetary aspect of this. And it all comes across the one dimensional boundary, which we have the authority to be here. What comes across doesn't. And we have the authority over that we found. But you have to use it wisely. And, you know, when it gets into the spiritual realm and the paranormal realm, you can give that authority away, and people need to realize this in the field by just simple things like a seance, you know, various things, just asking upon this stuff to come forward. You're giving it the authority to be here. And it's a double-edged sword. It really is. And we've proved it so many different ways, I will tell you, that it's interdimensional. And Bigelow's people actually proved it. And we replicated that through experiments. And now this will sound mundane, I know, and boring, but they proved the interdimensionality of this, that we had high-speed cameras set up in the poltergeist type activity that they replicated at Skinwalker. It was very interesting.
Let's go into that when we come back. We have to take our first break. We'll come back. Our guest tonight, Thomas Ferrario, the mysteries of the Marley Woods. We'll discuss that when we return right here to the Paranormal 360. All right, Thomas Ferrario, our guest this evening, the mystery of Marley Woods. You say that you've proven interdimensionally. How do we prove something that still seems theoretical to natural science? How do we prove that this thing is moving between dimensions as opposed to existing here and just being a little out of phase or shifted in a way that we don't see it or recognize it on a regular basis?
Right. And in one of the experiments, and there again, this will sound mundane and boring, but that they replicated at Marley, that we, when we work with Bigelow's people, and they did this at Skinwalker with a poltergeist type activity in one of the old structures there, cabins, we had a table and they put high-speed cameras, and these were top-of-the-art cameras that they did it just, the imagery was, these cameras were well able to catch a projectile, a fire, a bullet in flight. Mm-hmm. to the point you could almost do microscopy on the photo. That's how good these cameras were.
Wow. All right.
And we had this on top of the camera, on top of the tabletop focus, and just mundane thing like a set of car keys, a deck of playing cards. And these objects would move around from point A to B. And the interesting thing about that was that these objects were never caught in motion. They were always caught in their new location, which the physics of, and believe me, people far above my pay grade, the physicists and the people figured this out mathematically, said that the only way that this could be done was these things actually were taken and went interdimensional and reassigned a position on the table at that point. And it, and this went on for sometimes an hour. And so they proved in this way that this was interdimensionally based by this moment, this movement. And they actually had plasma vapors in high-tech cameras, plasma vapors that things reappeared and transgressed sort of like a portal, as Ted would say. And we had known portals in Marley, I will tell you. And I can go into that too.
But, oh, yeah, we'll get to it.
I will tell you that they proved it in so many ways out there that this was interdimensionally based. And
but doesn't that, can't we say, though, that if there is another planet out there within our galaxy that may be inhabited, if they have found a way to traverse from there to here, you know, science, Einstein and other physicists have talked about the folding of space. The concept that it's like taking that folded paper, poking it through is the fastest way to get through. So you're figuring out that element. So wouldn't space travel for these beings maybe be interdimensional, meaning that they're finding a way to bring one end of time and space closer to the other end so they can make that jump, that journey a little faster? That would still be considered interdimensional because it's jumping from the normal planes that we understand physics and first, second, and third, right, dimensions. It would be that kind of element assessed to this. If we found out how these craft are moving and appearing and disappearing, kind of doing the same thing.
You know, you're absolutely right. And I do believe at one time, and we also worked with a very great gentleman I know you knew, Stanton Freeman, the nuclear physicist. Right. And Stan he worked with us out there at times, and he was a good friend. And Stan, one evening we were speaking, and Stan knew I have to admit it, I was a Trekkie back then, years ago. And Stan looked at me one night and he said, what do you think about that stuff, Tom? And I said, we don't have the technology yet, Stan, but we will one day. And Stan said, no, Tom, you don't understand how it works. He said, our physics applies in our universe. And he said that, we'll never attain light speed. And that broke my heart. And I said, well, why, Stan? And he said, you do realize, to take an object, a solid object the size of a pea, to attain light speed would take the combined energy output of the Earth for 100 years. Now, do you really think we're going to have a starship do that? That's not practical. And I wasn't about to argue with Stan, but he told me the way it'll be done, you can attain anything through interdimensionally crossing that boundary. You get into a different set of physics on that side, and you have access to all the different planetary bodies. And Stan told me that, he said that even if you did attain light speed, it would take twice as much energy to come to a full stop with your destination and what you've expelled. So he just proved in so many ways that, unfortunately, I don't believe we're going to attain or anything has the speed of light.
Right. But at one point in history, not even so long ago, Tom, the idea that we were going to be in space was science fiction, that we were going to fly in the sky. I mean, the concept that one of the Wright brothers met one of the Apollo astronauts is pretty remarkable in how short a period of time. So just because we can't conceive it now doesn't mean that there isn't something out there we don't know about, right? And if we can find the way to remove or displace energy like in front, opening that envelope so that there's less friction as we travel through space-time. That should allow us to travel at speeds that are insanely high, maybe even beyond light speed. And science has been working on developing that technology for quite some time.
Yes, they have. And, you know, I used that exact argument with Stan. And Stan would tell me, he said, yes, Tom. He said, but, you know, the theory of flight and our ability doesn't exceed our known physics. He said, it just took us that long to learn how to do it. And he said, but you're dealing with exceeding our known physics in this universe and our ability. And he said, even communicating, he said, just the act of communication is almost at the realm of impossibility, because if you do communicate with another race, another planet, by the time they receive your signal, you're going to be gone, or the time spans in just communication is so great that everybody will be gone. So,
what a depressing notion that is. So, yes. Okay, we've just got a couple of minutes left in this segment, but Marley Woods, this kind of nondescript location, just this place that is an anomaly upon itself. How long ago was it discovered that there was all of this activity taking place there?
It's been in the family's generations, I will tell you. Ted, we went back and tried to get into the Native American aspect of this. We found out there was actually at one time there had been a presence there of the Native Americans, which it's questionable how big a presence they had at Marley. We have found artifacts of it, but it goes back several generations in the property owners. And I will tell you and back even in the 30s and 20s, it was a farm of entertainment. Some of the locals would go out on weekends and watch some of the activity, light ball activity, what they call twinkle lights in some of the fields, and the light beam activity. So it's not a new phenomenon out there, I will tell you.
Do you think, I'll throw this question to you and then let's dive into this deeper when we come back. The concept that light is a way to transfer information as well. Could we be maybe misinterpreting or misunderstanding, thinking the anomaly itself is just visual? Have they done any work in using like a laser microphone into one of these light sources to see if there's some kind of detailed data that might be fed through that we're missing because we're so... look at the lights that we're missing the transmission that might be folded within. We'll talk more with our guest, Tom Ferrario, as we continue to look into the mysteries of Marley Woods. All right, Tom. So I know these are big questions and it's not always easy to give a definitive answer, but you know, before the break, I was mentioning to you, you know, all of these different possibilities and concepts of things that might be taking place. And light, we know light photons carry image and message and data. Has anybody done anything where we've tried to read the center of these light anomalies or pick it up to see if there's other details aside from the visual that may make sense to us?
They have done some of that. We haven't done that at Marley. They had years ago had done that at Skinwalker, and they are presently working on that. I will tell you, a much higher advanced system than what they had, the original equipment they had. And they have had some limited success with that. But it goes into, when you deal with this, as Ted said, you're dealing with what the Native Americans refer to this intelligence as, the tricksters. And I will tell you that at Skinwalker and Marley, the one thing that Ted always warned me about in the initial day, the beginning when I was out there, was you're dealing with an intelligence that is always one step ahead of you. It will always be one step ahead of you. And even at Skinwalker, they're finding out now when they plan experiments. And we learned this the hard way at Marley. When we would make plans for experiments, we would always make them off the grounds and not at the location. Because I will tell you, and I gave this advice, we did work with the people at Skinwalker. We were going to, Beyond Skinwalker was actually scheduled to do the first season out at Site 1 at Marley Woods. And we had a death on the property, and the property owner at Site 1 backed out 6 weeks before we were going to start shooting out there, which, believe me, they weren't happy with me when I had to stop, call, and cancel them. But it's an intelligence that's there. And when you're there, it's all, if you can't see it, don't believe me, it's there with you. It's monitoring you. And I will tell this, people that deal in the paranormal, that even as much as ghost hunters, the one bit of advice I can tell them is when you enter a structure, when you're discussing things, what you're going to do, how you're going to monitor it, what equipment you're going to use, while you're doing this, it's right by your side. It's watching you from the other side. It knows what you're going to do. And when you ask it a line of questions, what it is, trying to gain something from it, of course, it's going to tell you what you want to hear, and it's going to be just what you want it to be. So I always tell people, remember that when you're in this structure and you're dealing with this thing, it's watching you, monitoring you. It's right by your side, and it's always one step ahead of you because of that.
Well, I don't want to guess the indigenous tribes that go out and are from these locations. Maybe the reason you're not seeing as high a level of proof of them living there is that they knew enough to stay away from this area. They might have traversed through it to hunt or travel, but staying in that area may be something different, which may make sense as to why you find such little evidence of their involvement there, because they do seem to have a better understanding of the earth and its principles and the tree gods and water gods and rock gods and everything. They obviously, for a reason, right? There must be something like our belief systems in Christianity or Buddhism or whatever other ism out there. They must have been seeing something to apply their thought and religious theologies to.
You're exactly right. And they don't have the filters that we look through, what we deal with. They've seen it in a much more simplistic, real. I mean, they were dealing in their world that we go into these elements, you know, for a hobby or investigation or scientific expenditure. And these people were living in that world, and they had a better touch with reality of what was going on. And that goes into cryptids. I will tell you, Bigfoot sightings, all the strange cryptids we had in Marley. So,
well, then you brought up earlier that these things are always nearby. They listen to you. They're watching you.
Yes.
You said that you think that they present themselves as we expect them to. So do you think then Bigfoot and these cryptid creatures and poltergeist activity are not that, that it is just something taking on that guise because that's something we're familiar with?
Actually, I will tell you, when it gets into the cryptids such as Bigfoot, Bigfoot is a that gets into a realm that they are totally a real. They are results, remnants of the Nephilim. I truly believe it. And this gets into a religious realm. I've been so lucky to deal with theologians that have been in this line of work. I'll tell you, Reverend John Schroeder, that worked at McDonnell Douglas with the astronauts, that was their field chaplain. And he was the Missouri MUFON chaplain for us, that we dealt with things. Another gentleman, I would love to give you the name. His family doesn't want me, but he was a scholar, religious scholar that studied at the Vatican. And it's an incredible story. I could go in. That's a show in itself. But I will tell you that the Bigfoot are actually the remnants of the Nephilim. And, you know, the original, and I've known several Bigfoot researchers, and I had to just, you know, in the beginning when they started doing the DNA work with the Bigfoot remnants and testing, the experts would throw out, of course, the crude DNA work back then, not mitochondrial like now and all that. But they always threw out, when the testing would come back, had human DNA in it. Mm-hmm. Now, I will tell you now, the more advanced our testing equipment goes and the deeper we go into the DNA work, it always shows human DNA stronger in the Bigfoot testing. Now, there again, there's a reason for that. If you get into remnants of the Nephilim, that these creatures are truly a little bit human, and that goes into the religious aspect of this. But they are very real when they're on this side, as much of this is. They are flesh and blood. When they cross that dimensional boundary, they're here. But as so many have found in the Bigfoot studies, when they're not here, they're not here. And you could go through that forest with 1,000 men hand to hand, and you're not going to find a living, breeding population.
Right. But if they have the ability, if whatever this energy is, has the ability to trick us and play our minds against us, then how can we assert the fact that then Bigfoot is real, that aliens are real, that ghosts are real? Because if this energy has the ability to manipulate and adapt, it may be taking a form that it thinks we want to see, or that it's playing with us, and that it's Bigfoot may very real exist, but maybe not in Marley Woods, because this thing is taking on that visage because that's what we're putting out to the universe. That's the information we're detailing it with.
Yeah, I truly believe it's that the Bigfoot is very real. It is flesh and blood when it's here. As many of the cryptids are, you know, we had at Marley, we had the strange, what we called the sloth / polar bear critter, and we can get into that.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about that when we come back. Let's discuss some of these specifics of what has been seen, what has been witnessed, and more importantly, not secondhand stories that Tom Ferrario has heard from locals, but what has Tom actually witnessed in his time an exploration of the Marley Woods. And if you have a location near you that you feel kind of fills the same void, that has strange lights, anomalies, sounds, creatures, ghosts, I'd love to hear about it. Alert me. Let me know. You never know where it may turn up next. So let us know. Dave at paranormal60.com. That's Dave at paranormal60.com. That's the best way to reach me. And it's also the name of my podcast. You can watch Monday and Wednesday nights live on YouTube, Paranormal 60. Remember, you can always check out the podcast version of this show wherever you listen to podcasts. Just look up Paranormal 360. All right, as this first hour comes to a close, Tom is going to be here with us for the remainder of the show, into next hour as well, as we explore this a little further. But let's start to talk a little bit about the specifics of what you personally have witnessed in the research and the investigations into Marley Woods. And I heard you mention there was one sector. How many are there total? How many sectors in this one anomalous location?
Oh, it just goes on to so many aspects. The cryptid activity, the what we call the white polar bear / sloth, 400-pound animal that one of the ranchers said he made it ready. He actually shot it. We were out there a week later, and we found hair samples, 16-inch long white hairs on a 4-strand barbed wire fence. We found tracks, and I have those on, I video this on my YouTube channel. And Ted had a very good research person named Phyllis Budinger, did all through the years his research and microscopy and DNA work in the day, very crude. And the 16-inch white long hairs came back, no known match. So what leaves that? And the interesting thing about this was when the rancher shot this animal, he said it went through the 4-strand barbed wire fence. Now, he said it didn't go over or under. He said it was just like it dissipated. It passed through the fence as if the fence wasn't there. But yet in the process, it left these 16-inch long white hairs. So, you know, what does that? And it goes into horse mutilation, cattle mutilation, deer mutilation, structured object, crop circles, aggroglyphs.
How do you think, though, okay, something can be hit with a bullet, but it can walk through barbed wire? Do you think that it's able to phase itself? So at one point it was corporeal, it was a hard form, that took the bullet, and then it phased itself to get out of the area?
You're exactly right when you mentioned the word phase itself. It actually, that was a process of the ability to go interdimensional. They use that in various ways to be give it certain attributes that it can, if there's a boundary or something that might stop it, it uses this, it passes right through this. And we've had strange things. I mean, the ranchers over the years, in one instance, the rancher one morning, one of his ponds where he waters his cattle, and this is, you're talking 1,200 acres on one site, 700 acres site two. And It was a pond, real light skim of ice on it one morning, light snow. He goes down to the pond. He sees 13-inch, three-toed tracks, which is considerable mass, going out to the pond, on top of the pond, and terminating in the end of the pond.
All right. So you've seen these footprints. You know that there's something out there. And now you put a laundry list of things that are known to happen there. Of those things that are known to happen, how many have you physically witnessed?
I've physically witnessed most of the different, the light ball activity, the cryptids, and a very traumatic thing, which I will tell you that injured Ted. And over the years, it injured ranchers, and it injured me, which I have, to this day, I live with health, believe me, ramifications from what happened to us out there with one that was called the light beam. And when we filmed with Ben Hansen out there on UFO Witness, they tried to replicate this and they couldn't do it. But I will tell you that it happened to Ted and I and other team members through the years. And I can go into that whenever you'd like. But.
Well, yeah, please let us know about it. Now, when you say that it's affected you, is this some kind of affect of radiation, some kind of radiation burns that you're dealing with?
We truly believe that the light beam, it was, and what they're dealing with out at the bad guy seems to be out at Skinwalker, microwave radiation in that spectrum. And just putting it in a nutshell, I'll compile this for you, but one evening, the ranchers have all talked about seeing a light beam through the years, going through the fields and for what, like it was hunting for something. And one night, Ted and I were coming back from site two onto site one, and you're dealing with a dirt road off a gravel road on 1,200 acres, all fence, gated community, nothing in there. And a light beam came up behind our vehicle, overtook us. Ted and I seen it. It lit up the interior of the vehicle that you couldn't believe. We could see inside the air vents. It was so bright. And Ted, I said to Ted, are you seeing this? And Ted looked at me and he said, well, Tom, hell yes, I'm seeing this. And but it left effects on us.
It did. Do you think that being steeped in that environment for so long is part of the reason Ted is not here anymore?
No, I don't believe. Okay. I don't believe. It in his case, it made him nausea, sick that evening. In my case, it affected my vision long term. And I have documentation of this. Ted didn't like to talk about it unless we could prove it three ways. And I've documented photo analysis of this. My hair went from dark brown in a couple months to blonde or white, what you see today. I had macular cyst in my eyes from this incident. I had to go have operations, and macular cyst is three times more dangerous than cataracts. But I live with that to this day.
Yeah, I would just think being in those areas, and I know they talk about it on Skinwalker Ranch, that there are health issues that come with being invested in this. Do you wear any special gear, radioactive gear, anything to kind of try to keep protected while you're out there?
No, except I will tell you, when we went back out on UFO Witness, I felt it my duty to protect the people. And I had a lot of microwave monitoring equipment, new stuff that I bought to protect us and watch for it. And at three times, I will tell you, at 3 a.m. in the morning in the field, no wires, no housing, nothing around, no reason for this. My microwave detector had an audible and a visual cue. It went from green, yellow to red. Three times into the danger zone. And I do believe that the intelligence was just letting me know that it was still there and what it was capable of, and that I better not mess around, because at Skinwalker, when they dig in the ground, that's what activates things. And at Marley, it seems like when you bring out strangers, it doesn't like that, and it lets you know.
We're talking about the mysteries of Marley Woods and all of the strange phenomena that's known to take place there. Our guest tonight is Thomas Ferrario. He's here with us for the next hour. We're going to continue discussing this, talking about some of the things that have taken place. But what more recently has begun to unfold in Marley Woods? And do you feel that this presence is malevolent in nature, or are these things, these blasts, these lights, are they simply a warning trying to keep people out? you'd think these hyper intelligent beings would realize that doing these type of things, making these things noticeable, we are a curious race and a curious set of people. We're going to keep coming back looking for answers. We'll do that when we return. Tom Ferrari, our guest, right here on the Paranormal 360.